All right. Yes. Hello, everybody. Welcome. Thank you for coming to Let's Talk About Sex, a meeting that Marsha, my friend in service, started so that we can have a place to talk and explore each other's minds about sex and sobriety. I'm so excited. I do want to mention, for a disclaimer, this meeting is about sex, and I know that a lot of us as alcoholics and addicts experience a lot of trauma. So if you need support, reach out for support. We will open a breakout room for, connection and for whatever you need. If you feel like heightened anxiety or you're feeling triggered, we can definitely offer that. And make sure you call your people too. They're going to be worried about you. Then I would also ask that you raise your hand after our speakers share, and then I will call on you in the order that you raise your hand. And I am happy to pass it over to Mike. He will be our first speaker of the day, and he has an amazing mind. So please give a warm welcome, you guys.
Yay. I guess that's me, right? Yeah. So I'm Mike G from Atlanta, Santa from Atlanta, and I'm very pleased to be here. I think I'm going to turn my original sound for musicians on. Very good. My audio is okay, I assume. Very nice. All right. Well, so let's talk about sex, baby. Usually, I kind of wake up fairly late on weekends, and usually I've already rubbed one out before a meeting, but I saved it for you, so here we go. Anyway, I know that this is funny because I'm a little nervous in a sense that I'm like, I've never talked about like just sex, in an AA meeting, and I've been going to SLAA, fairly recently, and still trying to figure out to what degree I belong there and exploring things like, anorexia and stuff like that. I'll just share my stuff because I know that I've had different ideas about sex in and out of recovery. And I don't know if it'll help somebody, but it'll sure help me. And that's why I do these things. Also, because, my friend Marsha asked, so what the fuck? Usually, these sort of events, we like to start off with a joke, do we not? Yes, we do. Okay. So, one of my favorite sex jokes is this: I have a 12-inch Johnson, but I seldom use it as a rule. Okay. No? All right. Yeah. See, that's a 12-inch Johnson. Anyway, thought that would, of course, I can't hear the laughter. Naturally, everyone's muted, but I'm assuming that did the job, and now I'm talking. Okay, so what is normal? What is an attitude or an action about sex or love or intimacy that is normal? Or maybe common. I don't like the word normal. There's a part of me, as most of you know, that I wouldn't want to be a member of any club that would have me as a member. I think Groucho Marx said that. I definitely resonate with that. So I'm a bit of an iconoclast, just a little bit, not a whole lot. And I'm 60 years old now, so there's an element of not giving a shit, and paying my fucking dues. So, there you go. But I have had different ideas about this, and whether there's the physical aspect of exchange of fluids with sex, or there's folks that have said, and I really like the idea that really 90% of sex is up here, and 10% of it is performing some actions that pretty much the whole animal kingdom does in some form or fashion. Well, I don't know about sex, but I do know that the first, this is funny, usually we talk about our first drinking thing, whatever. So the first time I remember anything that what we would call sexual or something like that, and Let me just say, I hadn't had any real sexual trauma. I think up until really I was in my 20s, I guess I could say, maybe. But it's not the kind that a lot of folks have. So, but anyway, I remember being in elementary school, and the chair that I was sort of leaning on was at a certain height, and I just remember the pleasant sensation of rubbing against the chair, and didn't know whether it was good or bad or right or wrong, but it's not like I, was like a monkey in the zoo, and I'm just, no, I'm it was just. I think I knew that I should be discreet about it, I think I knew that much. But I don't know how I knew that. and then love, innocent love. I remember there was a, I used to have these school crushes, and so there was a couple of girls. One time I went on, I guess you could call it a play date or whatever, where I think I went, this girl lived right near the school, and so I went to her house after, and we hung out. And she showed me her, big tree that she had her initials on and stuff like that. And it was fun. And neither of us knew what to do aside from that we liked each other, and we were, in like second or third grade or something like that, and then, I walked home. Okay, we all lived close enough to the school where I would walk home, and I didn't know anything about it or what to make of it, and I never followed it up or anything like that because we were all in the same class. But it was just nice having a friend. That was a the opposite sex, and I didn't know what to make of it, and but it felt nice and it felt innocent. Maybe part of me is looking back on that and thinking that, but so I had some school crushes, but initially, there were people in school, and I saw that people were like going out, and I always wondered what that was all about, and eventually. So a couple of things concurrently was like, I was like, ooh, am I going to have the guts to ask someone out? That kind of a thing. And then concurrently with that, I found my father's Playboys and all those kind of things. And so that's a fascinating world. And, you get all the things of like, oh, yeah, we're in the treehouse with all the guys and blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. And maybe you do a circle jerk, maybe you don't, whatever. But I had, I had this one friend, and he had a thing where he wanted to, he thought it would be an interesting idea for us to cuddle each other's private parts. And I don't know. He was a good friend, a real good friend. And it was, kids do that kind of thing. And it was kind of innocent. I mean, it was very innocent. I didn't, it wasn't my idea, but I was curious. And so, we thought it was funny. And of course, I didn't have a 12-inch Johnson then. But we measured each other's dicks, and that's the kind of thing that kids do. And I don't know if that has anything to do with sex exactly, but it's about curiosity and that kind of thing. And so that was the sort of deal that I had pretty much growing up. And then, but I was scared, see, because here's the thing, I was afraid of rejection, and I had low self-esteem, and that was mainly because of the house that I grew up in. My dad was a rageaholic, and so a lot of the stuff was directed at me if I didn't do what he thought I should be doing. And it mainly had to do with the fact that I was a quiet dude. And so he thought I should be out there with the guys and playing football and all that kind of thing. And I was, in my room reading comic books or whatever. And it just wasn't his vision, But so I had a bit of a low self-esteem type of situation. And so I was afraid of rejection, afraid of what it would look like. Everything was external. All the authorities were external for me back then. And also then I got to be a certain age where I'm like, everyone's doing it but me. I'm the only virgin left in the high school, et cetera, and I just had this sneaking suspicion because all the guys were talking about it and did da da da. Anyway, then there I had a couple of experiences in high school where actually these girls called me up. I mean, it doesn't get any better than this. This girl called me up and wanted me to come over, and then propositioned me, and like they were from my high school, and I'm like, ah, this is a surprise, not unpleasant. Okay, fair enough. And and I wasn't really attracted to either of them that much, but also I had never had a blowjob, so I figured, tick that box. Okay. And it was all kind of innocent. And I, again, I didn't know what to make of all this. And I wouldn't, I'm looking back and I have no idea what's childhood, teenage innocence, and what's the result of early trauma when folks are doing some shit and all that kind of thing. Not a clue. Not a clue. And even in my own life, and I think that that's something that's for each of us to explore, because one thing I do know is that there's a lot of interpretations that you can make of pretty much anything. And I can look at all these things in a few different ways. So I didn't know whether, I guess what were my ideas about sex? Watch TV or that kind of a thing. You see the Brady Bunch and you see other things and some soft porn at night on Skinamax and stuff like that. And I didn't know what was going on. I just thought everyone was doing it with me. I didn't know whether you had to be connected to the individual or what. But I do know that once I was not a virgin anymore, then it became like a commodity. And then I was sort of in a relationship and it's sort of like more of that, more of that. That can't dry up, that can't dry up. And so I sometimes stayed in relationships because I didn't want that to dry up. So what I've eventually happened is that, with rare exception, I never ended any of my relationships. They were ended by the other individual for whatever reason, my drinking or this, that, or the other. So with trauma, there was a time where I was hanging out with a friend and I had this sort of girlfriend, but I was in this free love kind of a thing, I was like 20, still a virgin, free love kind of thing, I had a girlfriend, but she really wasn't my girlfriend. We just sort of went out, and but I was still a virgin because I was afraid of what they would say, or I didn't do it right, or that kind of a thing. And I had some opportunities, and then I thought, me and this friend had a relationship where our dads used to sort of pit us against each other. It was kind of weird, and like because we were about the same age, and et cetera, and like so, but I never really liked him a whole lot, never really trusted him. And because he cheated at chess one time when I went to the bathroom and I saw he moved, and he's like, and I'm like, in my head, I'm like, watch this guy. Anyway, so I thought, but at the same time, and one time I went to a bar mitzvah and he said, if you don't fuck her, I will, And I'm like, huh, well, that's interesting. This is just a friend of mine and I actually hadn't planned on fucking her. Maybe we would make out or something like that. I don't know. Maybe not. But she's just a friend, really. That was what was going on. But that was where he was at, right? Anyway, so I invited this one sort of girlfriend or whatever, and basically, I hadn't fucked her yet after knowing her for a year, and he fucked her on the first night, and his brother, also. I mean, it was sort of we were all involved in this kind of thing. There was a lot of drinking going on, and so that was such to me that was a very traumatic event because there was the rivalry. And then I never knew sort of who to blame for years and years. I'm like, well, my cousin I can't trust. This is my cousin. I said friend, but I meant cousin. And I'm like, or is the girl a slut? What's going on? I had no idea. And now I look at it from a recovery perspective, and it's like, okay, first of all, when folks are drinking, I mean, all cards are off the table, you're on the, whatever, off the, what do you call that? You know what I'm saying? All bets are off, et cetera. So, but. Did they have some kind of trauma? That's a way that I have to look at it now in the sense of that we were all kids doing, we were all agents. We all knew what we were doing, et cetera, to a degree. I don't know. All I know is for me, that I have woken up at night and just think of that and it's just like, oh fuck, and my night is ruined. And that's, decades into sobriety. That is some weird shit. Okay. And another thing too is that with that cousin, one time we fiddled about in a way, and he sort of convinced me, but at the same time, I mean, if I would have said no, it would have been no issue, but I was kind of curious. We were in our 20s. It was a kind of thing where, I mean, listening to a lot of Bowie and Lou Reed, and there was just a lot of sort of androgyny going on at the time. And you're experimenting with this, that, and the other. And I wanted to see what it might feel like to have a dick up my ass. So there's that. And I'm like, okay, not for me, but tick that box. All right. So, it was what it was. But I could look back on it and say, huh, with my earlier friend and with that idea didn't sort of come to me. I was convinced, I mean, it didn't take much convincing, but at the same time, I could look at that as some in a certain sort of way. But again, I choose to look at it as sort of, well, he wasn't that innocent, but I was, and I was looking at it as like, this is something that I wanted to, experience because I was in a mood for experience everything, all the different kinds of drugs and all that kind of stuff. That's just what was going on. And anyway, so moving forward from that, I had a couple of girlfriends before sobriety, and it ended up being that my first time was with a friend of mine, this girl who is now a lesbian. That doesn't matter. I don't know why I said that, but I used to make this joke that I turned all my girlfriends into lesbians, which I don't have the power to do, honestly. But anyway, she was so cool and it's awesome, and we don't talk now, but it's not because we, it's just that we drifted apart, but I still think warmly of her. And that was my first time, and it wasn't her first time at all, and she had some trauma. At least I can say that, my first time was wonderful and enjoyable with someone who I loved in whatever sort of way, shape, or form that is at the time. But again, commodity, right? And within a few months, she was like, "Yeah, I love you as a friend, and and I'm like, "Yeah, okay." But it was heartbreaking, and it was, because that revenue stream, if you will, had dried up. And but so I had a couple other girlfriends and that kind of thing, and they tended to be younger than me by several years, But I was a nice guy, I never forced myself on anyone or any of that kind of stuff. It was just sort of like, all kind of sort of free love and hippie type stuff going on. And so there were some one night stands and bars and that kind of a thing. But at the end of the day, I got sober. And then all of a sudden, I'm reading in the big book about, what's our ideal sex life and all this kind of thing. I'm like, fuck, huh, that's interesting. And I kind of went with the societal norm of like, oh, you have two people and they fall in love with each other and they relate intimately and they express themselves and express their love through sex oftentimes and that kind of a thing. And I met my wife to be, Julie, great gal. I wasn't attracted to her at first. And so we were friends because I was like a year or two sober, and we were like, we both wanted to practice being friends with a member of the opposite sex and where there wouldn't be sex involved, like that wasn't something that was a thing. And that was great. And guess what? We had a lot of great conversations. Within a few months, we started to feel that warm feeling. We fell in love, and or some sort of thing like that. And so then I kissed her, and playing Blackbird, and it was just a very nice experience. And I remember when she told me that she thinks she loves me or whatever, and I was feeling the same thing. I ate a whole fucking can of olives. I didn't know what to do. It was just crazy. It was wonderful. And innocent. And that's the way it should be in sobriety. We were friends, and then we were lovers, and then we got married, and we were married for 28 years, and we had a couple kids. And so we're divorced now, and it's been about 4 years. And what happened was, when we got married, we both had this idea of marriage that I think was the same. And then, but what I realize about myself is that I'm wired differently from a lot of people, and maintenance of things is not my forte. So for me, it was kind of like I signed the paper, I said I do, we're married, So like this idea that I have to continuously prove my love to her, or buy her flowers all the time and that kind of thing. I'm like, I don't get it. I mean, I know you love me. I mean, it just never, I never understood that other individuals might need that kind of a thing. Now, I know, and look, I've read the Five Love Languages books and all that kind of thing, and I love that stuff. It's very cool. It's a model. It's great stuff, because I always laugh, and I've said this in a meeting recently, is, oh, there's only five love languages. What did they? Oh, wait, no, they discovered a sixth love language in a cave in fucking Siberia or whatever. I mean, It's all a bunch of bullshit, but it's a model and it's good. And if I can use it to help my ass out to be a better person, score. Okay. But yeah, so I asked myself, what kind of love languages are, and I took the test even recently and it's inconclusive. So I'm like, I don't fucking know, but I know that hers were like touch and time and stuff. And I think my dad's was gifts because he used to do things for us. And if we didn't appreciate it, all hell would break loose or whatever, or he would bring it up literally for the rest of his life, et cetera. The things that I forgot, steel trap of these things. Anyway, that's going off on a tangent. So, we're married and stuff. Now a weird thing happened, and because everything was really good for a few years, I became a born again Christian about, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years into sobriety. I did that for like 10 or 15 years. I suspended my disbelief, and I've told the story before. I'm a agnostic atheist Jew coming in, and then this God thing in AA or whatever. I'm like, okay, I'll go for it. I would have eaten my own shit to get sober. I was that desperate, and I'm like, yeah, this is palatable. Of your own understanding, that's cool. I can dig it. But then, because people had, people who sometimes I would give them a hand job for, $10 so I could get a 12-pack. But they would spout John 3:16 to me, picking up, me hitchhiking and whatnot, this kind of thing. So I was familiar with that stuff. And I remember this one lady picked me up hitchhiking. Very nice lady. She was a mom, and no sex or anything. But she was so nice that she brought me. It was in like 7 in the morning because I was still up from the night before, and she brought me to get a 12-pack, and we had a talk about Jesus. And she brought me to meet her kids, and we saw a thing on the rapture, and I've always been a skeptic, and I, was whatever. But anyway, at this point in time, I'm sort of like, it was explained to me in a way that a Jewish boy could understand about blood sacrifice and all this kind of thing. And I thought to myself, well, either a third of the planet is fucking nuts, or maybe they have something, and I don't know about it. Let me go and basically do Paschal's Wager and try this out, see how it works. And I felt like a wonderful thing, and blah blah blah, et cetera. Excitement when you, like when you discover a new band and that kind of thing. That's what it was like. Okay. Anyway, so I'm in. And now there's a lot of ways that you can interpret that shit. And one time, a couple years in, I was still young in this religion thing, but there's this thing about the wife being submissive. And so there was this one time where I wanted to have sex and Julie did not. And I thought I kind of forced her to. And, she, it was traumatic for her, and I didn't realize that, but I thought, and I was looking at my Bible later, it was like, oh yeah, Hosea was unfaithful to God and da, 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 and all that kind of thing. I'm like reading all kinds of shit into this fucking shit anyway. And then I talked to the pastor the next day about this, said, what about submitting? He said, no, that was wrong what you did. And he was a really good guy. But anyway, so that's a regret. I have few regrets, but that's a regret that I have. And as far as making amends and all that kind of a thing over a period of time, yeah. And there was one time where she felt the need, like I think she wanted to sort of teach me a lesson. And she, because here's the thing, she's a highly sensitive person. So she, like, there's been times where I'm like talking like I am now, like maybe passionately, but she's hearing me yelling at her, And so I didn't know that was a thing. Now I know that's a thing. And so I was like, okay, there's two conversations everyone's having, the one that I'm having and the one that you're hearing and everyone's hearing. So there's, 40, 50 conversations, 42 in this room or 41 minus me. So she basically kind of forced herself on me. And I was sort of like, oh, this is different. This is interesting. It wasn't unpleasant. Well, no, it was, I mean, I was just like, where's all this coming from? But it was something I think that she needed to do. She needed to prove and see how it feels or whatever. And I got to tell you, it did not feel great. It did not feel great. Yeah. I know some people love that. Absolutely. Good. There's no right and wrong, I don't think, with any of this kind of stuff. There's just sort of what's common and what's not. And it's up to each of us to decide these kind of things. So, kind of wrapping it up, where am I going now? Let's see. So all this time, I'm one that likes to masturbate, and you look at it and you say, well, there's porn addicts and stuff like that, and the people who get into porn and there's all this, and it's like child trafficking, but with better looking people or whatever, and all this kind of, but it's like, you know what, and now there's cam girls and they have bad experiences, and I don't know about any of that stuff. I can't make any judgments about why people do these kind of things. I'm sure a lot of it's shitty. I'm sure a lot of people are making six figures and writing your own tickets. I have no idea. All I know is I like to rub one out. And there was a time where during the marriage, I was sort of like, especially when I was a Christian, is this sinful? I don't know. Dr. Ruth says it's normal. I don't know. I never really figured that shit out. And then I'm like, well, wait a second. I'm stealing it away from my wife, right? I'm neglecting her in this area and all that. And here's the way I look at it now. Because used to be external authority. It's like, what is it? What is it? What? Who? How should I look at it? Da, da, da. I'll tell you how I look at it. When I have a nice meal with my wife and we're going out to dinner, we both, this is fantastic. It's wonderful. But if I'm hungry and she's not hungry, or if she's hungry or I'm not hungry, go eat. You don't wait for me, et cetera, right? So it's kind of like that for me. Relationships, our marriage ended because I'm not wired like everybody else. And again, her needs weren't being met. That was basically it. She still saw the marriage in a certain way, and I was definitely starting to see it in different ways. And like the friendship was always more important to me than the marriage. That's what I realized. So intimacy, sex, love, what are these things? I don't know. But here's where I'm at now is I've separated them because for me, sex is, it could be for fornication, procreation. It could be for expressing love. Absolutely. A lot of things can be for that. Or it could be just about dopamine, right? And so in the same way that I might like to eat a candy bar or something like that, maybe that kind of a thing, right? But how harmful is it, right? Does it change the brain? I think so. I think maybe so. There's an interesting book I found called Quit Porn and Get Rich. And I'm like, oh, because it means that I've already exhausted myself and then I'm fucking lazy basically. And I'm like, eh, I hear what they're saying there. Might be something to that. But could it be all things in moderation? I don't know. What's too much? You tell me. And then that's your fucking deal. It's not mine. So I'll tell me. Thank you very much. And love. I'm not even sure it exists. I do know I've felt these things and we call it love, but what are you talking about when you say it? What am I talking about when I say it? I don't know. Intimacy? Here's the thing. And I'll wrap it up with this. I'm not everybody's cup of tea. When here's how I want to have a relationship with you is that we fuck when either one of us wants to. Okay, great. And then like what I do is I put you in my pocket and then do my thing and then like take you out when I, oh yeah, right, that's right. Oh yeah, hey, how are you? You want to do something? Eh, whatever, maybe have sex? Okay, right. That's kind of it. I wouldn't wish that upon my not my worst enemy, but someone who's not my best friend. It's not a lot of folks, that's not okay for them. So I think everybody has the right to have the relationship that they want. What I realize now is that I was married for almost 3 decades. I brought up a couple kids. I did the family thing. I did that societal norm. But guess what? I realized here, I'm not the marrying kind. I'm just not. I've separated sex and love. I love people. I can love humanity in the way of that, nobody asked to be born. Here we are. We have this human condition. I can love people for that. And then intimacy means any conversation I'm having with someone at a coffee shop or on Zoom, where we're just people and we're sharing a moment. That's intimacy. Whether I have it in a relationship that lasts X amount or I have it ad hoc, it does not fucking matter to me. Nobody told me that. Nobody told me that I could do that, It's always about, oh, it's got to be forever, da, da, da. And then there's things like polyamory and stuff like that. Look at these creative ways of folks getting their needs met. I don't judge. These are all good things. These are fantastic things. So do what you need to, I guess that's my motto. Is there anything else that I have to say? The kinship of common suffering is this connection that I like to make with people, and it's on a human level. If I have friends now that are of the opposite gender, it's going to be platonic, because I'm not going to, you know, it's not like it's off the table forever, but the deal is this: for me, this is just for me, sex will fuck it up, whatever friendship or whatever it is that I have. Now, I know that in order to get through the amount of work that I need to do for that to not happen, guess what? Let me just rub one out. I'm not willing to do that work. It's a pain in the ass. And again, I still want to put the person in my pocket, and that's just not fair. So, I'm Mike. I'm pleased to be here, and hopefully, you know, this is helpful for you. It was very helpful for me. And Marcia, thank you so much, my dear friend, for inviting me to do this. I got a lot out of it. Cheers.
Oh my God, Mike. That was so interesting. Like, I feel like I could have heard you talk for another hour and been like, oh my God. I feel like your thoughts on intimacy is really beautiful. And your ideas about, first of all, your openness and honesty and like willingness to just be here with us and speak what's on your mind. Like, it really, I don't know, it really changes the perception that sex is like not something to be nervous about. It's something to be intimate about, you know, it's something to be intentional. I love the tone that you use when you speak, you know. I can't wait to hear commentary and stuff, but I'm gonna pass it to Zoe quickly, and then let them talk, and then we'll get back to shares of what did we all learn from this. Thank you so much for coming and speaking to us. I really need you to come to other meetings so I could be there just listen to you talk. All right, Zoe, come on in. Let us know what you think and what your ideas and stuff are.
Hey family, I'm Zoe and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for making this meeting possible. Everyone that's doing service. And Mike, how am I going to follow that? You bastard. My sobriety date is the 23rd of June 2015, and ironically, that was the last time I had sex. My recovery's been quite anorexic in that department, and my story is probably the reason why. You know, I'm kind of the other end of the scale, that the thought of a continuous relationship frightens the life out of me, and you know, maybe it won't always be like that, but today it is, and I'm okay with that. You know, I came into AA, I was broke. I had burnt all my bridges. I couldn't be trusted. I couldn't trust myself. And the assets I had was a dirty bag of washing, two breasts and a vagina. And, you know, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was looking around the room for the married people, the creepy guy, the creepy woman, you know, and I suppose I learned in my early recovery that I'm like a homing pigeon to the most fucked up people in the room. I am. You know what I mean? I walk in the room and I will pick the one that's either going to be violent, it's going to be fucking off the scales, you know, and the mad thing was that when I learned that, it was quite helpful for me, because it meant if I fancy you, then I need to fucking leave you alone. You know, that was what was going on in early recovery. But, you know, going back to, I suppose I start at the beginning, was my mum tells me this story of, she said it in the 70s, the day I was born, there was a massive snowstorm in the UK, and I lived up north in Northumberland. I hadn't lived there long because I'd just been born, obviously. But anyway, and my father couldn't get in to pick us up. So we're in hospital for like 3 or 4 days or whatever. And she gets home and she finds glass in her bed from some woman that my dad had been screwing. So this was kind of, although I was far too young to understand that, but, you know, she's told me that story so many times. Whether it's true or not, I'll never know. But, you know, my first sort of I don't know, like a view on man, woman, fucking relationships, all that stuff, which the inventory tells me to look at painfully. I had those two to look at. He's sleeping around. She's fucking disappearing off, getting drunk, seemingly couldn't give a shit. And then she leaves him when I'm five and a half and takes me with her. So I've learned, you know, in my childhood time, that people don't really get on, and when things go bad, run away. I was like, oh, okay, I got that, got that, got that. Cool. So fast forward, you know, like I got engaged in my life so far. I've been engaged five times, right? Never quite got to the marriage, thankfully, I'd say. And sorry to any married people in the room, but that's just my view. I got engaged to the first person, and we had this lovely little flat, and we had all like matching kitchenware. The place was it was we had like a sound system, you know, like back in the day, you know, you don't get we had this fucking huge sound system, separates used to call them, and these big speakers and a fucking TV that you could literally put a Great Dane in it. It was so fucking big. And my partner at the time was so proud of all this stuff, you know. And it was so funny because how I met him is I used to stalk him. Like, I didn't know how to talk to people really, so I used to stalk him. And by the time we actually started talking, I knew where he worked, what time he went on break. He didn't even have a clue who I was at the time. He worked in the ironmongers across the road from the pub, and I used to be the cleaner there doing the bedrooms and that. And I'd look out the window, you know, oh, there he is. And I'd feel all like totally in love with this guy, totally in love with him. I couldn't think about anything else. And it was like overwhelming, you know, that kind of the phenomenon of craving. I had it bad. You know, I couldn't get it out of my head. I knew he went, walked home for lunchtime, and then he came back at 2, and I knew he finished at 5, and I could watch him from round the corner, you know, like just putting away all the wheelbarrows and that from this shop where he used to work. It was a garden centre type place. And I'd watch him. Well, blow me, I'm not even making this up, right? The first drunk I ever had, I had a bottle of whiskey. I was like 15 or something, and and I'm walking around on my own, fucking sliding down the walls and fucking in a right old state. Who do I bump into? I bump into him, and I was mortified. And he's got me by the back of the coat, and he's taking me home, and I'm puking and pissing myself. Of course, all this time that I've been following this guy around that I'm besotted with, and now I've gone and behaved like that in front of him. Well, blow me, you know, for months afterwards, I would avoid where he used to walk at lunchtime, and I would avoid the shop that he worked, you know, like all this secret behavior where I've got to hide out the way. And oh my God, you know, it's a no doubt at all that I'm wired up a bit funny, definitely alcoholic, and I definitely crave love to be touched. You know, it was off the fucking scale, absolutely off the scale. Anyway, fast forward, we somehow got together. We were into the club scene together, so we go like dancing all night, take drugs, and that's sort of how we got together really. And then I used to get his drugs for him and all that. And you know, it's interesting when you've got a few drugs, all that, you end up making friends that perhaps you wouldn't have. So yeah, we used to go off dancing, and eventually we got together. And not long after, we got engaged, and it was me that pushed for it. And I've learned this in my inventory process. It was me that pushed for the engagement, because I desperately need that connection. I need you to commit to me so I can feel whole. You know, I need that. And soon as the fucking ring goes on, I'm like, holy shit, how can I get out of this? You know, That's not what I signed up for. I just wanted to know he was in for the real deal. You know what I mean? And so the ring went on, and we come back from clubbing one night. I mean, there's a huge story around it all, but I ain't got time here. We come back from clubbing one night, and I was, knackered, went off to bed, and then I woke up in the night thinking, where is he? And by this time I'd really gone off him, like I didn't even like the way he breathed, and the way he held his knife and fork, the way he put his shoes by the door so neat, used to piss me off, like, oh my God, what a slabber, and I've caught him wanking over the, we didn't have internet then, but I caught him wanking over the underwear section of the catalogue, right? And he was wearing one of my dresses. Well, that fucking freaked me out no end. So I went to the bedroom, I get my underwear drawer, and I start beating him. Well, I was enraged, beating him round the head with this underwear drawer. And that was me. I'm off. I'm off. You're a fucking weirdo. I'm off. Well, little did I know, wherever I go, I take myself with me. And I am not even lying. That story repeated itself, right? Not just five, well, five times, the same fucking thing. Get engaged, make a commitment, freak out, and I'm loading up my van and I'm disappearing off, but how it all kind of started with this thing was like when I was young, this a friend of my mum's used to come back to the house after the pub with her, and I think he was wanted to sleep with her. But she used to be so drunk and off her face most of the time. He ended up in bed with me. Now, in those moments, it's like when I look back, the fucking guy was a paedophile, but I fell in love with this guy. And the weirdest thing was that I started sort of following him round. So this behavior is been going on the whole time. I started following him round. And then he gave me a key to his house. He told me that we could go public when I was 16, and I was like, oh, this is brilliant, and strangely, he lived in the same fucking flat that me and my first real partner rented. So I had all this secret back of the head reptilian stuff going on, while I'm trying to navigate the world or the where I lived. And time and time again, the engagements, like the first one I think lasted about 4 years. And then the second one was about 3 years. And then the third one was about 2 years. And then, to cut a long story sideways, the last one was about, I don't know, it was a couple of months, And as that time went on, and as I got sicker in my disease, whether it be with people, whether it be with the drinking I was doing or the drugging I was doing or who I was hanging around with, bearing in mind my favorite place to be was the most run-down shithole of a cider bar you could find. And I'd hang out with all the old bubble-nosed men, like in my early 20s. They love me, you know what I mean? And I like the attention, I like the attention, and it got me into a lot of trouble. But yeah, the last one, I did that thing again where we got engaged, everything was seemingly going well. And one night, I've been awake so many days on drugs, and I've been doing it, I thought, secretly. So this particular night, I wasn't up for sex, and I discovered I really only want to have sex when I'm on drugs, because otherwise I just want to be left alone. Anyway, this particular night, he says to me, if you won't have sex with me, I'll go and have it somewhere else. And it reminded me really of where how I grew up with my mum. She had so many boyfriends, like when I was a kid. My dad was off cheating with someone else. And then, and what I'm getting at is I had like a belief system, a broken belief system about what women are. What men are, all men cheating bastards, can't be trusted. All women slags, all of them, And because I was living in that environment, and in that's what I was doing, But yeah, this guy, I said to him, I'm leaving, and he went, no, you fucking not. So I go run out the flat, get in the car, and he smashes the fucking windscreen of my car. And I'm trying to drive away, and he's got his fingers wrapped around. You know, that's what it got like. I mean, who the hell wants to be in a relationship like that? You know, it was like just every relationship I got into ended up with this fucking carnage, you know. And what my mum taught me when I was five and a half, right, stayed with me. So when the shit hits a fan, I load up the car with all my animals, my house plants, and some dirty washing, and I fuck off. Not knowing that I repeat the same shit over and over and over again. Towards the end, it got so bad that I remember going out, we went to this club, and I remember walking home, and I could sense like there was someone behind me. I could sense, you know, you just get a feeling, don't you? I look round, there's this kiddie, I don't know how old he was, but he was must have been, I don't know, late oldish older teenager, you know. And I was so mortal drunk. And I went home and I went in the house and I just felt it was a bit weird. And then he walked in and I don't know what happened that night, but he was gone in the morning, but it's stuck with me. You know, those things used to happen over and over and over again. And I would think, you know, why does this sort of keep happening? The amount of times I've been in bed in my own house and someone's come in and got into bed with me, I didn't know how to, you know, I didn't have a sense of self. By this time, I was very good at disassociating from my body. So I would just go through with whatever. I got quite good at it, you know. I could jump up and down for fucking hours, you know what I mean? It was like no bother to me, but just get on with it. Let's get the job done so I can get back to being me or whatever. And this is the weirdest thing was that you know, how my sex life started was how it ended in a way, you know, from early. And at the end of my drinking and drugging, but like I said, the last time I had sex was the 23rd of June 2015. And that week running up to that, I probably slept with 10 different people. You know, I fuck it, one was in and then one was out. I mean, you know, I take my hat off to people who charge for it because I was the sort of person who would give it away and I'd come and tidy your house. You know, that level of low self-esteem that it ripped my fucking head off, it did, you know. Like, oh, I could be sat here a millionaire, you know. But what's happened like in recovery is it sort of scares me a bit, you know, the thought of sex and stuff. I read a thing once that you know, every time a man ejaculates into my vagina, that a part of them is like gonna be with me forever. And it made me think, fucking hell, you know, I wanted to cut my waist off, you know what I mean? Like, what the fuck is that? And but what it's done is it's a bit of a blessing because it's helped me to you know, the inventory talks about what is my sound ideal. And until I actually know what that is, I'm not even going to go there. And for me, the way life was going, it's a beautiful thing to say, actually, no, you know. Yeah, I mean, I just become like a bloody robot, you know, like a robot. I remember once I used to do this thing where I used to go and like in my van and I'd go and park in some fucking dodgy lay-by or corner of a field or something in the middle of the night, high, you know, and I'd try somewhere where I could get a phone signal and I'd be in there wanking, watching porn, you know, like, and I didn't realize once that of course, I had my phone onto the car thing, and it ran my battery down. I mean, I was there so long, I nearly drew blood. I swear to God, you know. And I had to phone up my stepdad because I couldn't start the car. Right? And he's like, "Why are you parked in the middle of a field?" I said, "Well, when it was dark, it wasn't a field. I thought it was a road." You know, like you could quite often find me sort of parked around in some fucking lay-by sites or whatever. You know, I was always quite interested in my drinking days to go out dogging. I don't know if you've heard of that, but you know, I quite like that kind of going out in the woods and just having a bonk with a load of random people. You know, that interested me quite a lot, you know, and it really did. But I got into some like quite seedy sort of dark porn watching, and I don't do it anymore. You know, I don't touch myself anymore, and I should, you know, and I really should, because it's a natural thing to do. But you know, for me at the moment, it does bring up quite a lot of shame and quite a lot of yeah, just shame really about my behavior. And it really does. But the weirdest thing was, like, before I shared, was like, what am I going to talk about in recovery with regards to sex, you know? And the only message I have is, what is my sane and sound ideal? You know, what is that? You know, I still don't know, but the blessing is, now I've been sober a while, it isn't what it was by a long stretch. You know, the people that I got engaged to, they were violent, narcissistic people, except the first one. He was a bit soft, really, you know, he was a bit soft for me. But there was one thing going on in the background for about 22 years, and it was like, that's my timer. There was this guy called Andrew, and I met him when I was about 15, and he was my dealer. And I used to put all this like sexy lingerie on. He was in his 20s, and I'd go around there, and we'd have sex, and he'd be like bagging up all the drugs and that. And I thought he was the most interesting, exciting person. You know, that phenomenon of craving, you know, couldn't get enough of him. And over the years, whether it be a few months, a few years, or whatever, we would hook up. You know, we would hook up, and we'd have a really like banging night. You know, forgive the pun. You know, we watch the sun come up on the bonnet of a car on some hill. So, you know, and this went on 22 years. And the last time I saw him, we had spent the night together, and I was due to go into rehab probably a week or two after. And of course, you know, people's lives change, and by this time he'd had a mortgage, a couple of kids, a missus, poor suffering missus for, you know. And I remember that day, and it was like an awakening. I remember that night, well, the morning when he left, and I looked at him, and I had that feeling. I just knew that I wasn't going to do it again. Like something had shifted in me, you know. I wasn't going to do that again. To put myself in that situation where I watch yet another man go back to his wife or family or back to his life after doing that, you know, I fucking deserve more than that, you know. And it was quite. It spooked me a bit, really, because up until that moment, for 36 years of all this carry on, I never thought of myself as worthy of better than that, because my experience has been either being the mistress. I was a very good mistress and very good at keeping secrets, or being in relationships where at some point I'm going to have to load the van and bugger off. And I think that was the start of my recovery, you know. Yeah, the same sound sex ideal, you know, what is it? I used to look at married people with children, and I'd think, oh my God, they're so sad. So sad, you know, poor, you know, should be out here having a party, you know, having a laugh. And you know, the truth was, I couldn't do it. Drunk or sober, I couldn't do it. But I'm open to the idea. You know, I'm open to the idea now that it's possible for this alcoholic to have a stable, consistent, loving, kind, considerate relationship. And I won't tolerate anything other than that. So that's probably why I'm still single. But, you know, thank you for letting me be of service. And I was very anxious about, I'm always anxious about sharing at meetings. You know, does it ever go away, Mike? I don't fucking know. I've got sweaty palms, you know. But it is good to be of service. And I never know what I'm going to say before I share. And I know that in an hour's time, I'm going to do the one I should have just done better, you know. But that's life, eh? So I'll leave it there. Thank you, Marcia, and everyone that's making this happen. And over to you.